welcome to the Dinosaur Man Nerdcast. I'm Andy Hughes. I'm here with Alex Hudson.
And this week I've been mostly thinking about Josh Hartnett's career.
Why?
It's just sad the way it went.
How did it go? Are you writing a book?
Hollywood Homicide, you remember that film?
Nope.
Him and Harrison Ford played two detectives in Hollywood investigating murders of the rich and the famous.
Anyway, we're back. We had a week off.
It's my new intros.
What, just...
I'm just going to tell you who I've been thinking about this week, okay. And it'll be someone that you have not thought about for, I'm guessing, a couple of years.
I haven't thought of Josh Hartnett.
For the correct amount of time since 2005.
We had a week off.
We did loads of stuff. We went on holiday together. We went to the
Louvre.
Okay, I was going to say Maldives, but apparently we were on a budget, so we went to the Louvre.
Life got in the way, so we took a week off. But we're back. Welcome
we
back.
Went on holiday to the Maldives
and the Louvre.
It was a package deal.
What's a package?
The least well-planned package deal anyone's ever assembled.
But welcome to the midweek episode of News and Reviews, where we talk news and reviews.
Yeah, you're in a weird mood tonight. I don't know what it is.
Should we start with news?
Okay.
I've got one bit.
Go for it. Tell me.
Now, you said you got one bit and we thought it might be the same. We'll find out.
One, two, three. Matrix. I'm having a baby. Yeah, that was also one of mine. Yeah, Matrix.
You're having a baby?
Yeah, just me on my own. Oh. At my bum.
You've been watching Junior again, haven't you?
Is that what happened in Junior? It came out of his bum?
I don't know.
Out of his penis. Okay. More painful, but believable? No.
No,
no way. There was nothing believable about Junior.
Because I'm pretty sure Arnold Schwarzenegger was a scientist in that.
It came around at a time when there were a lot of unrealistic films. Jack, after all.
Yeah. Twins.
Twins.
Because there's no way that they are twins.
That didn't happen. No one saw a Predator. It's too clever. It wouldn't let you see it.
Exactly.
I'm saying it happened, but not like that.
First bit of news then. Matrix. Apparently they're doing a Matrix. Yes. At least there's rumours that Warner Brothers are doing a Matrix reboot / sequel.
Yes.
And they want, is it Michael B. Jordan?
That is correct.
To be the star.
Yeah.
What do you think of this? Like,
it's interesting that this time, because the last time these rumours abounded was around about 3 or 4 years ago, and the Wachowskis were attached as writers of a sort of... it was supposed to pick up the story and sort of be a new trilogy of films that had loose connections to the first. But this time they've got absolutely no involvement. They've not been consulted on it, but I think it's doomed to fail.
Is it not like their intellectual property or anything, like in movie format? Obviously, it's based on a book, isn't it?
You would guess that Warner Brothers own the rights.
I suppose so. Well, I suppose
Warner Brothers?
Yeah. I think it's Warner Brothers.
Whoever it is, you'd imagine they own the rights to the that they own those rights.
Like, are you wanting to see a Matrix reboot?
I have no interest in that franchise. I had no interest in that franchise past the first one.
Like, the first one's fantastic, and I think it's undoubtedly fantastic. Like, it did so well in... Like, it was one of those films where at school you'd be like, oh, it's the film you've got to see like 4 times to try and understand. Mm-hmm. So one of those was like Fight Club and that kind of thing. Like, that first one has such a cult status, and the problem is those sequels really damaged its reputation.
Yeah, because they were terrible films.
Like, I always figured that the first Matrix was a thinker. No, it gave you a lot to think about. The second one was more, they tried really pushing on action.
Mm.
Going, oh, we're going to use really weird CGI.
Yeah.
CGI stuff. And then also there's going to be a 15-minute monologue by the architect. And then the third one was trying to mould the two. And those two films, that second and third, didn't really work for me.
No.
The first one, though, I still think holds up as a really, really strong film.
Is it because you don't like Jesus metaphors being shoved in your face?
No.
Okay. I think that's kind of the reason I didn't. I felt like, you know, the story is fairly straightforward and simple. And actually, once you get past the initial sort of Jesus allegory, there's not a lot to that franchise.
Did you think it needed sequels from the first one? No, before you saw them. When you heard it was a sequel, was you excited by that?
Well, I can't remember being excited at that time about anything, because it was so long ago.
Pokemon was on, and that's what we needed.
I don't think it was a case of me being excited. I didn't rush to see those films. I saw them on DVD years after they got released. I didn't have any interest. The first one's self-contained enough that it feels like you can just watch it and go, okay, cool.
Okay. Bit like what we said with DC a few weeks ago, how would you make a Matrix film that you would be interested in then?
Oh, well, I've seen some names that have been sort of put forward by a certain website that I won't mention the name of for fear of them getting more internet traction than us.
Facebook!
The directors we'd love to see work in this, but they've pulled out some fucking stupid names here and there.
Adam Sandler.
No. By and large, they're pulling out sort of independently minded filmmakers, because obviously the Wachowskis were independent filmmakers at that time. They'd only had one film at that point. And I think they're saying, oh, well, you know, you want to recapture the magic of the... That's not the way to do it. Because if you've got a franchise like The Matrix now, it's going to have a budget of $150 million at least now. So you can't put someone like Jeremy Saulnier in charge of it, because Jeremy Saulnier's two films to this point have been made for about a total of $6 million. So the thing that works about Jeremy Saulnier is that his films are low budget, and that inspires his creativity.
Who is Jeremy Tudelan?
So Jeremy Saulnier directed Blue Ruin in 2013 and Green Room last year. But, you know, he is... widely considered one of the, you know,
but great... I asked who Jeremy Tudelan is.
Yeah, well, Jeremy Tudelan is a mid-centre, I believe, who plays... he did play Leon for a short time. I can't remember who he was.
Maybe he
went to Monaco at one point. This is sport banter.
Okay, so how would you make a... Okay, how would you make a Matrix movie that make you interested in who should direct it? Who should be in charge of that franchise? If they had to do it,
Why do they have to do
I know you're shaking
things?
Your head, but... Because I like hearing...
All right, fine.
I like hearing how films
if
you would appeal to you.
If you had to make one,
yeah,
make it about one of the families who live in Zion, right?
Make it about those two brothers who could go kind of cars.
Right, the twins.
Yeah.
No. This is the film I want. All right. You remember that all-night rave scene that takes place in Zion, right? It's a romantic comedy starring Seth Rogen... and
Catherine Heigl getting the team back together.
A Catherine Heigl type. So someone like Amanda Seyfried. Seyfried, is that it?
Okay.
Yeah. You know what? No. Forget the Rogan. This is Efron's project. This is the good stuff that we've been wanting him to do. It's a romantic comedy, but with the backdrop of a sort of dystopian future apocalypse.
Yeah.
So it adds the weight of that... to like, oh, I wonder if the DJ's going to play my request.
I've got it. Right.
And also I'm covered in all this sort of real sweat, as opposed to Matrix sweat. No one sweats in the Matrix.
What it is it starts with the all-night rave, and then the film is about them going to the Zion doctor because, you know, it's the morning after.
No.
She doesn't have a morning after. I've made Knocked Up again.
Made Knocked Up. This is the problem. No one wants to see Knocked Up after they'd seen Knocked Up.
I watched Knocked Up again a few days ago. When did I last watch it? Oh, no, I watched it at Christmas. That's a couple of months ago.
That is months ago now. That is 3 months at least.
Watched Knocked Up again.
Okay,
did you? Doesn't quite hold up.
I think it had good moments in it, but I think... The thing is, those Apatow movies always sort of rely on the fact that you will get one or two good lines from the gang.
Yeah.
But the actual story itself is never good. And who would have thought that was the one that got a sequel?
They want more Paul Rudd. Okay, so that's Matrix, right? It's going to be a thing. It's going to be
got Michael Weaver Jordan in it.
I like Michael B. Jordan.
He's good enough.
Like,
it'll be a bad film, I think.
The thing is with Michael B. Jordan is, even in bad films, he comes off being alright. Like, Fantastic Four is a terrible movie, but he's endearing enough to watch, so...
You recommending Fantastic Four to me on the strength of his performance?
No, not at all. It's a terrible
But
film.
If I had to watch it, they have to make The Matrix.
Yeah, you
They don't have to do anything, Andy.
Commercialism's got me, man.
All right, cool. So
you said you had another bit of news, though?
Yeah, so I just want to bring this up to make sure I get the name right and all the info right.
Jeremy Tulalan.
So you'll be delighted to know that good old DC have been in the news again.
Oh, yes. This will be fun.
Yeah. So, did you know Suicide Squad 2 has got itself a new writer?
No.
Okay, so, despite being financially successful, Suicide Squad was critically panned by everyone, and quite rightly so.
Okay.
As a result, David Ayer has left the project in order to do Gotham City Sirens.
I heard the rumour of who's going to take over as director.
Yes, but I think that's actually a pipe dream.
Mel Gibson one.
Yeah, I think he's not going to go anywhere near. He's not that sort of a director. He wants his vision. This is not his vision.
And there's not enough minorities not, to try and quash.
If you try and make Suicide Squad 2 Apocalypto, it won't work as either a Suicide Squad film or a Mel Gibson film.
Yeah.
He doesn't seem like the right fit. Everyone's saying, oh, well, he's crazy enough to do it. No, he's racist. He's anti-Semitic. That doesn't mean he's crazy enough to do that. It means that he's
I haven't forgotten Gibson. Hollywood might have, but I haven't.
8 years is not the cut-off point. We should still be remembering the fact that there is a good reason he doesn't win the Oscar. Because A, it wasn't the best directed film, and B, he's still an anti-Semite. So,
continue.
One of my major issues with Suicide Squad was the plot, was the script itself was weak.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
So you would think what DC need to do, what Warner Brothers need to do, is bring in a writer of real talent. So they've
Adam Sandler type.
They've listened to the masses and they've said, right, we're going to get in this guy, Adam Kozad. And you're thinking, who's that?
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you, one film, and that's all you need to know about exactly the way this project's going to go. Like, I'm quite excited for this now.
Okay.
The Legend of Tarzan.
Oh, dear.
One of the worst films of last year.
We did not enjoy
it. He's the new screenwriter for Suicide Squad 2, based on the fact that the thing is, they mention, earlier in this article that I was reading, they mention, oh, well, despite being financially successful, Suicide Squad was critically panned, so we need to get DC need to get on board with someone who's going to make this one. And then, when they mentioned the fact that he wrote Legend of Tarzan, they said, you know, it was a mild financial success. Don't mention the critical rating, because it is through the floor. It's about 5% on Rotten Tomatoes or something.
Yeah, because I don't think we ever reviewed Legend of Tarzan, but basically we didn't
I think
it.
We did.
Did we? Okay.
I think...
Either way, we didn't like it. It wasn't great. So it's worrying that's the direction they go. Like, what you need is you need somebody who is a competent writer, like somebody who can kind of basically.
David Ayer is an all right writer.
The thing about the Suicide Squad is they need to play with levels. They need to play with it going to some dark places, but also having moments of levity because of the cast of characters they've got, and they need somebody who can play with that.
Mm.
And that's why I say Adam Sandler.
My interest,
he just needs a break.
My interest lies in now, will they get rid of Harley Quinn from the Suicide Squad because she's doing the Gotham City Sirens thing and bring in someone else to replace her in the squad? Or maybe
that's what they did in the comics. They got to the end of the New 52 run of Suicide Squad and they brought in the new Suicide Squad. And
she's now the most marketable character of that squad.
Yeah.
More so even than Will Smith. And you think, well, what are you going to do with this franchise if she's not in it?
And the thing is, they could...
You're going to make it reliant on old Randall Flagg or whatever his name is?
He didn't play with... there's a lot of stuff they didn't do in Suicide Squad, and we've been over it before. But there's this whole kind of tension between Harley Quinn and Deadshot where, you know, they... It was kind of like a will they won't they situation where it's kind of will they, but if they do, I don't trust that Harley Quinn's doing this for the right reason. She's doing it to kind of gain one.
In Suicide Squad, it's genuinely a case of will they, won't they, why don't I care?
And that's the problem. So I genuinely, I've said this before and I'll say it again, I'm not excited for, like, they released a Wonder Woman trailer, the origin trailer, and I'm not excited because I can't get excited for any DC property until they can prove to me they do stuff. One, we're not going to get you off on one because I know that you're going to start going...
My lips are sealed. I'm not saying minutes. Anything until we see... but this is my last piece on DC unless they do something stupid until we see Wonder Woman.
But
then we'll do a Sunday episode on it.
I will watch Wonder Woman, but I can't be excited for it. And that's the thing. Like, they can do whatever they want in the background, but until you do something right, I can't support you. And we talked about it at length. If you want to hear Alex's thoughts, there's a whole episode on it a couple of weeks ago.
Yep.
But yeah, so We'll see. We'll see. Have you got any more news?
Just that Wonder Woman looks like a piece of trash. Anyway, let's move on to reviews.
Reviews, just to point out, Alex has seen Kong Skull Island.
Yes, but we're waiting till next week.
Yeah, we'll do that one next week because I haven't seen it yet, and I don't want any spoilers at all.
No, that's fine.
But I am excited to find out if it is better than any Star Wars movie ever made.
I have to believe that it is. I need to tweet Jacob a jump cut, that reminds me.
So, what have we watched?
Let's start off with Moonlight.
Let's start with Moonlight.
So this is coming, you know, about 4 weeks too late. However, we both watched Moonlight. I watched it a few weeks ago. I saw it fairly recently. So obviously, it's gained a lot of traction recently. Moonlight won Best Picture Oscar at the Academy Awards recently, under much sort of confusion and just bafflement and bleary eyes from us two who had stayed up all night. Anyway, so Moonlight is adapted from a play. I can't remember who wrote it now. Trayvon Martin, something like that. The adaptation was done by Barry Jenkins, who also directs it, and is basically drawn from life experiences of both these two. So the play itself seemed to have been based on Trayvon's life, and then so it's a story told in three acts essentially. Each act follows the main character Chiron as three different actors.
Mm-hmm.
So you have him as a young child of 9, 10, something like that.
Yeah.
And you have him mid-teens, and then you have him as a grown man, and tells the story of growing up in Miami, yeah, somewhere in Miami, I think, in Florida, as a young gay black man, and sort of the people around him who helped him realize who he was, and the way in which that affects him later in life. First of all, there's, you know, there's obviously the Oscar stuff to go through and say, you know, it won a lot of awards. It was nominated for a lot of awards. For 8 and won 3, didn't it? You know, I think in terms of an adaptation, it felt, I think the story itself, it felt well told to me. Mm. I know that we disagree on this slightly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just waiting for you to come in. Like,
I was waiting for you to get rubbish.
I really like the strength of the performances and the strength of the words that they're coming out with. It really feels like a well crafted film to me.
Yeah.
Naomi Harris, especially.
Naomi Harris is fantastic.
She's one of the real standouts of the year. Even I would say, it was a tough category this year for best supporting actress.
That's the problem. That's the problem. Like, in a lot of years, I think she could have won that. But the problem is, it was tough.
And amazingly, the right person didn't even win because Hayley Squires was not nominated for I, Daniel Blake. Anyway, so let's talk about it. You and I have slightly different opinions on the feel of the film.
Because you really enjoyed this.
For me, it is the out of those films nominated, it was the best picture, I think.
And for me, it wasn't.
No, but that's because you're a La La Land fanboy, and I'm backlashing, motherfucker. 14 nominations is too damn many. I mean, that would be pointless if after the fact I was now backlashing. No, you know, I love La La Land a lot, but for me, this felt like a more complete film, and you know, again, not to turn this into a La La Land podcast, but you know, I admire the scale and the sort of the ambition of La La Land, and it is a great, spectacular film to watch, but I just couldn't help but feel that this actually connected with me on a human level in a way that didn't. It did in certain ways, but didn't hit hard.
Moonlight is a more humanistic story.
Yeah.
Like, it's a more realistic story that you could see any day on the street.
Well, La La Land is
fantastical. My problem was this film just left me a bit cold. I didn't really connect with it at all.
Mm.
And it's not because of subject matter or anything like that. It's more just I couldn't connect with the main character. I couldn't connect with Chiron. Mm. No matter who was playing him throughout. Like, what I've realised as I've thought about this more is the cast around him, I really like. I'm going to butcher his name.
Mahershala Ali.
Is great in this. You know, he's really great as this guidance figure. But I said to you afterwards, his screen time is so limited, I'm surprised he won best supporting when you've got someone like my man Michael Shannon, who was fantastic, and Jeff Bridges, who was also in that category, who really, their performances vastly outweigh what Mahershala Ali.
Do you want me to just be like, yes, Ali?
outweigh what he did, and I think he's good, but I, you know, and the thing is, there are people around like Janelle Monáe's performance is really good. The guy who plays older Kevin is really, really good. What I will say is the cinematography of this film is fantastic, but the problem is there's just this hole in the middle of it where I'm just, and it's a bit like what I had with Nocturnal Animals, except with Nocturnal Animals, there was something that left me cold that I didn't quite know what it was. In this, I think it is that central performance. I just didn't ever really warm to that character. I didn't really have that connection. I couldn't really get to grips with what... It was genuinely a thing if I was watching it and going, I understand this is a good movie, I understand it's well made and things like that, but I don't understand why it's best picture. And I genuinely think it's because of the subject matter it deals with is why it won Best Picture, more than it actually being the best picture. I think La La Land was a better made film. I also think Manchester by the Sea was a better written film. That, you know, I'm gonna get some flack for this, but I genuinely
Manchester by the Sea did win the best original screenplay Oscar for a reason. I think out of the screenplays this year, I think Manchester by the Sea screenplay is the best.
And, you know, I'm not the huge biggest fan of Manchester by the Sea. I enjoy it to an extent. I think I'm enjoying it more the longer I get away from it. You know, I think it might be better than Lion. I'm just trying to think. Arrival, did I enjoy Arrival more? Potentially, you know. And the thing is, this is the thing. I look at that Best Picture and go, it won. But do I think, in my mind, is it better? And I'm like, I don't think it.
The interesting comparison, I've seen a couple of people draw comparison to it. Basically, people who have been hating on it, essentially, to use a term I don't particularly agree with, but, you know, who have been negative towards Moonlight, have said, oh, well, this is the greatest travesty in Oscars history since Crash won the Oscar in, I think, 2004.
I don't agree with that.
Now, the problem is, the comparison they're drawing is, oh, well, Crash only won because it's about racism. No, Crash won because it's about racism. Yes, that's correct. But also, Crash is a terribly made film. It's not a good film. This is demonstrably a good film.
Yeah.
So it deserved to be in those nominations. I think Crash felt like it was one of these things. Whenever I see someone say, oh, well, if the only reason that we award these things is for the subject matter, then this is exactly like Crash. And you go, well, no, there are very clear definitions between this and Crash.
I'm not saying that. Yeah. I want to just clear that up. What I'm saying is, for the same thing as Lion, I can say, is one of the best films of this year. But I don't think it was Best Picture.
Right.
I think Moonlight is one of the best films of this year. You know, there's enough good stuff there, and it's well made and well constructed, and it is well written. Just I don't think to the level of, you know, I think Manchester by the Sea is the best written film of the year. But I don't think it's a Best Picture. And that is purely because, and it's probably personal feeling, that I just felt it left me cold. That I just didn't really.
I think this is it. I think it all depends on whether you can connect with Chiron.
There were some great moments in there. Don't get me wrong.
Because if you don't, then the film can't work because it's so centered around that story. Because that's the story.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you've got the tertiary stuff going on.
I think the problem is, like, there's a really great scene at the end. There's a really great scene in the final thing. The real end of it between Sharon and Kevin is a really strong scene, but I didn't feel all that much because by that point I hadn't really connected with him throughout that film.
Okay.
Throughout the film up to that third part, but when it came to that point, I was like, I get this is great, and honestly, I think the guy who played Kevin in that final part is fantastic. I think he's one of the best things about the film. I genuinely do. I couldn't appreciate it. And it's bad because I'm there going, I want to see why this is. I want to see what everyone else says when they go, oh, this is, you know, the best movie of this year, maybe best movie of the last so many years. And I'm there going, I just can't see it. And I want to see it, but I genuinely just can't. And it's a little bit annoying.
Well, that's how I do the podcast, so we can have a difference of opinion, you know.
And the thing is, I, at no point, and I don't want people to get me wrong, at no point am I saying this is a bad movie. I'd say watch it. It does deal with something important, you know. But for me, it just didn't do it. Just didn't hit the notes that I was hoping it would. But obviously you have a different opinion, which is...
Yeah, I mean, for me, it is the best movie of the last... certainly of those nominations, I would say. I'm struggling to think of something I saw last year where I was like, wow, that's better than that. I think Moonlight is the best for me. But likewise, I would say, you know, things like La La Land, I really did appreciate, but I just felt more of an impact with this. I'm not saying impact should be the thing that wins the Oscar, but I think the impact combined with the fact that it is a very well-made film and that it looks beautiful and it's written beautifully and performed beautifully, I think. But again, I connected with the central character in a way that you clearly didn't, and that's the key difference, I think. I've not met many people who don't like it, but then again, I've not met many people who've seen it.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's, like I said, I'll reiterate, it's not that I don't like it, it's just I think it's...
You can't find the thing that you needed to find.
Yeah, I can't find that sure. special thing.
We should move on because we are massively overrunning.
No, that's fine. I saw Passengers.
Okay, tell me about it.
I finally saw Passengers. I'll keep it really brief.
20-second review. Go.
No, because when you give your time limits, I always go over.
You'll go over anyway, so it doesn't matter.
Passengers is the story of two people finding themselves alone on a spaceship that's supposed to travel for X amount of years. They find themselves waking up 100 years too early, and why is that the case? And they're stuck on this. Jennifer Lawrence and Chris Pratt, and there's also Michael Sheen in there as a android.
Mm.
Now, the premise of this sounds interesting.
Mm-hmm.
There's a twist in it that they tell you right at the very start, and it really misses a trick. And the thing is, Passengers could have been a fantastic film. It really could have. It had everything there to be a Kubrickian kind of thriller, and really kind of really question question human nature and things like that. It doesn't do that, and it really kind of blows its wad in the first like 20 minutes, and it really let me down. And like I said, the visuals, and there's some nice moments in there, but it just completely misses a trick. And if you watch Passengers afterwards, have a look at what the original version of it was supposed to be with Keanu Reeves. Because basically, I pitched you an idea of how I would fix Passengers, and you told me, well, that was the original idea.
Yeah, that was the script of it in its original state.
Which is a much better film. I would say give it a miss unless you're trying to find something to put on. You want background noise, or if it's on TV and you...
Or if you're a Michael Sheen completist. Or,
yeah, yeah. But it's one of those that even though you've got Chris Pratt and Jennifer Lawrence, their on-screen charisma can't carry it through.
The reason I just didn't go and see it was because I watched the trailer and just went, I'm so disinterested by everything in this apart from one thing, which is the bar. Because it looks exactly like the bar from The Shining. And I was like, oh, okay, so they've gone with a Kubrickian feel to that. And you could have really pushed that. And they're clearly making a nod towards it because it's basically lifted straight from
and it's such a miss.
I just thought, that is not a good enough reason for me to go and see the film.
The whole film is just a swing and a miss. Like, everything's there for you to make this work, and you've completely missed the mark. But yeah, that's all I need to say about Passengers. Like, cool. Did you see any more films?
Well, we've seen a film... Both of us have seen a film last week.
Did we?
Yeah. Free Fire.
Oh shit, yeah, we saw Free Fire.
Do you want to talk about it now, or do you want to just save it for another time? Because...
No, I completely forgot we'd seen it.
Yeah, well, we're on 32 minutes.
It's fine, we've got time.
Okay, fine.
The thing is, welcome to the New World Order. We don't subscribe to time limits.
I will not be editing any of this out.
Maybe just the bit where your laptop decided to make weird noises. Or keep it in there.
I don't know, the podcast is supposed to be out in 4 minutes' time, so... Anyway, so we both went to see Free Fire.
Yes, we did. What is Free Fire?
Free Fire.
Hold on, that sounds like I didn't see it.
Yeah, yeah.
Explain the plot of Free Fire.
Okay, so Free Fire is the latest film from Ben Wheatley, co-written by him and his wife, Amy Jump, and directed by himself. So his last thing was High Rise, which was an adaptation of J.G. Ballard novel. This time he's gone and essentially created a film which is an arms deal gone wrong in Boston in the 1970s. So what you've got is an ensemble cast, and what you've got is a very simple setup, a sort of Reservoir Dog style kind of thing, where you have it's one locale, you don't go away from that, you just see this warehouse, and that's it.
Mm.
And it is essentially for an hour and 10 minutes, a firefight.
Yeah.
You've got 20 minutes or so, 25 minutes maybe at the start where it's setting everything up. But after that, it descends into a gun battle to end all cinematic gun battles. Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm predisposed to like a lot of Ben Wheatley's stuff. I can't think of something I've seen of his where I've gone, I'm always able to find merits in his stuff. And I think he is genuinely one of Britain's sort of most exciting filmmakers at the moment. This was yet another example of him being able to switch between genres and kind of go and do something completely madcap and different than he had done with the central theme of chaos is sort of still there, but against a massively different backdrop and also with sort of a completely different feel to the film. I loved it. I thought it was a really fun, enjoyable time. You know, it's an hour and a half and it's perfectly pitched at that. I think any longer and you'd feel like it was stretching the concept too thin, but I think, you know, they got enough in there to make it feel like it justified that running time.
No, absolutely. And I said this to you afterwards, I've said an hour and a half is the perfect length for this, and if you want to watch people that's just a lot of fun, this is perfect. I really enjoyed this. And the first Ben Wheatley film I watched was last year. I watched High Rise. And you weren't sure whether I was going to like it.
I had trepidations going in because I thought it's a fairly inaccessible novel, or it felt like it was going to be an adaptation
from a director
who is quite inaccessible. His previous work,
like you said, he's either 5 stars or 1 star. He's that kind of director.
Yeah, essentially, his films tend to get 5 stars or 1 stars, and if you're not on the 5 star camp, you're going, I don't see why this film is made, and you go. Okay, but I think there is a lot more merit to his work than
so that. I was quite looking forward to seeing Free Fire after seeing that, and also the trailers I thought looked fun, and it's got a phenomenal cast, like phenomenal, like the people he's got involved in this, like Brie Larson, Armie Hammer, Sholto Copley, Cillian Murphy,
Jack Rayner,
it's Michael Smiley,
yeah.
You know, it's a great cast, and they really nailed it. Like, it's just a lot of fun for an hour and a half. Like, there was moments where I was crime of laughter.
There's smart writing. There's
moments where you're like really enjoying intense action, you know, and he makes it so much realistic. We saw a question and answer session afterwards with Ben Wheatley, which was really interesting hearing him talk about this film and how he wanted to make a gunfight that isn't a Hollywood gunfight, but more realistic gunfight.
Yeah,
and he talks about how he went about like kind of making the sound of guns sound different throughout the film, so that it keeps you interested, and it doesn't, it keeps you engaged for this, because it isn't, like you said, an hour and a ten that is a gunfight.
Yeah.
And the only problem I had with this film was towards the end, I was like, oh no, they're about to do something, and then they didn't do it.
Yeah.
And so really, I had no real problems with this film. I just really enjoyed watching it, and I thought, for me, I don't think it's going to come out this year as one of the best films this year, because let's be honest, I've seen Logan, and Logan was phenomenal.
Yeah.
That's the one to beat at the moment. But, you know, I've seen some great films, and I don't think it's going to be the best, but I do think it's probably going to be one of the most fun films I've seen this year.
In terms of enjoyment value,
like it's going right to be right up there.
It's,
you right know, up
it's,
there.
It's the nice guys of this year at the moment, because it feels like it's said, so...
Because it's so brief in comparison to a lot of films, it actually flies by, and if anything, you're kind of there like, oh, I wish there was a little bit more. Like, I wish I could stay in that moment. But at the same time, you're like, when you think about it, you go, like you said, if this was longer, it would lose its effect completely. Yeah.
I think he does
a great job at keeping it.
He's worked out that the concept behind it is a good concept, but only
didn't
for...
stretch it too thin.
Yeah. But, you know, the question and answer session was fascinating. And it's nice to see someone who's so passionate about what they're doing and sort of enjoying what he's doing, because he's not there getting sort of, you know, too in depth with it and saying, oh, I only want to make a film that spoke to humanity on a fucking... He was like, no, I've made a film that is essentially a gunfight for an hour and a half.
I plotted it out in Minecraft.
Yeah, that was it.
He's a very funny guy
in Minecraft. But it's, you know, it's that classic example of a director who's sort of who's able to switch between, you know, he's talking about his next project being women with guns shooting giant crabs, and you think, okay, I can exactly see the Ben Wheatley vision for that film, and I can't actually wait until that comes out now. But again, what I would say is, if you haven't seen any of Ben Wheatley's stuff Free Fire is a good way to get into it, yeah, as well.
If you've got an hour and a half free, just go watch it. Like, it's a lot of fun. Like, it really is. What was I going to say? Oh, yeah. Early entry for this year into worst audience member we've ever existed.
Jesus. She experience. Was awful.
Like, just so you know, if you're in a cinema, behave yourself, because yeah, I'm really fucked off of you. I thought Assassin's Creed audience was bad. No. I thought Accounted audience was bad. But this one woman on her own
managed to ruin the film almost. No, she was terrible. If you're going to the cinema, and you don't want to be there, leave. Don't make it awful for everyone else around you. But I would say, you know, yeah, I think it's going to stand out as one of the sort of most fun films of the year. It's going to be...
I would absolutely recommend it. Absolutely. Obviously, very briefly...
Mention is that film's not out for another, 2.5 weeks, something like that. Yeah. I believe it's out the last Friday in March.
So put it in your diaries.
So, but yeah, when it comes out, do go and see it. And in fact, he's still doing the question and answer session.
Yeah, so if you didn't get along to one, do one.
If you're around a place where go on his website, you'll be able to find it. Go on the Free Fire website, find it, and go along, because he's a funny guy to listen to as well. Yeah, yeah.
Just quickly, ever so quickly, the last thing that we did this week is you got into Skyrim.
Oh, yeah, okay, so I got into Skyrim. It's better than I thought it was going to be. I didn't really have high expectations, apart from the fact that everyone said, oh, it's the greatest game ever, and I was like, well, I've played that. It's
maybe called Alien Isolation. Maybe marketed.
You know, that hasn't changed. Alien Isolation is still the greatest game ever made in my
life. But you're having a lot of fun, and it is
fun.
It's great for me and Mark to see you finally played it, although...
But I've added elements to it that clearly aren't there.
Well, I was explaining to Mark the other day, the thing about Skyrim is, I watched you playing it, and all I could think in my head was, you're doing it wrong, because the way we play is completely different. And I spoke to a couple of people about this since, and it seems to be a thing of the game, because the game's so great at letting you play your own way. Whenever you watch anyone else play it, you automatically just think, nah, I wouldn't have done that. But it has made me go, at some point, I think we are going to do a Skyrim special and talk about that game in particular, because there's a lot of people I know who really enjoyed it, and it's something that I'd really like to get in depth with. So at some point, keep your eyes posted about that, because it is something that I would like to discuss.
Keep your eyes posted. Put them in an envelope.
That famous phrase.
Send them to
keep your eyes posted.
Your eye socket, care of your face.
But yeah, I just thought I'd bring it up because it had been fun just watching you play it in a way that I have not seen it played before.
I'm playing it in a societal justice manner, and it is absolutely the only way to play this game. I watch you sneaking around, I'm just like, why are you sneaking around when you should be meeting out justice to innocent fishermen?
But I think...
You say innocent. Those fish were alive at one point.
I think that's where we're going to have to leave it, yeah. Definitely. But no, thank you for joining us. Thank you for joining us after we've had our week off as well. We enjoyed our break to the Louvre.
And the Maldives were lovely as well. Very nice of them to have moved the Maldives to the Louvre.
But where can they find us? Yeah, because that's the easier way to do it.
Cram the Maldives inside a museum.
Rather than move the Louvre to the Maldives.
All right, guys. This has been the Dinosaur Man Nerdcast. Hey, I've got exciting news on that as well soon, but I'm not allowed to tell you anything.
What?
I've made plans.
Oh, exciting news for me as well.
I think it would work well. We'll need a lot more time on our hands.
Okay.
We're launching a 24-hour TV station.
Oh, God.
It's going to be called Dinosaur Man TV. No dead air. No static.
We can't do that in an hour-long episode.
Always on the air. Anyway, as always, you can find us on Stitcher and on iTunes and on Buzzsprout. Why did I say Buzzsprout last when that's the one that people are least likely to check? No, wait, Stitcher's the least likely. As always, you can also rate, comment, subscribe, share, and review us there. It helps us with our ratings and...
just get found as well.
Our Brazilian listener found us because of a 5-star review. So why don't we deserve more Brazilian listeners? I'm asking you why. Tell me. No, but as always, you can also find us on Facebook and on iTunes. No, I've said that bit. Twitter. Twitter is at DinosaurMan15. Facebook is the name of the fucking show. Andy, you've been a delight and a gracious host as always.
Thank you to Johnny Neves as ever for the theme song.
I was going
to
miss him out this time.
This week it was inspired by Moonlight and was played by a gay black man.
During a full moon, he was also a werewolf. Skyrim.
Thank you, Alex.
You're welcome.
And until next time.
Josh Hartnett.
You're ending it.
Josh.
Just Josh Hartnett.
Hartnett. Give him an old Wikipedia. Bump that page up. Let's edit. Let's wiki edit Josh Hartnett.
What, put favourite podcast, Dinosaur Man Nerdcast. Just put it in there.
Every week, this is what we're doing.
Every week, we'll edit a new Legends Squad.
Roll out.